So today's Dhamma is the mala, the stains. Purity is a cornerstone of the Buddha's teaching. In Buddhism, the assumption is that we're all here trying to become better people, to purify our minds, and we have the same sense of the value of purity, of goodness. And so we are very interested in the things that make the mind impure. Ultimately, what it means is the things that have the potential to lead to suffering, or not just the potential, the things that do invariably lead to suffering, or for us to cause suffering in others and to corrupt the mind and lead the mind in a bad direction. So we have interest in things like the defilements, the stains. We have many lists of dhammas that we're to look out for and to direct our attention towards freeing our minds from. Mala is, there's nine of them. It's just one of the many lists of things. This one is listed in the Abhidhamma. But what you can notice from the list as I go through them is it's some of the more subtle defilements. The word mala they use for rust. Rust to iron is a mala. So something that stains or disfigures or corrupts something else is a mala. So that these are called the purisa mala, the things that stain a person's character. So they're not the more glaring things like murder or theft or so on. They're a little more subtle, and they're things that good people should watch out for, that is hard even for good people to be free from. And for the most part, for many of them, it's going to be impossible, or for some of them anyway, it's going to be impossible for us to avoid entirely when first starting out on the path. So they're the things that we have to pay attention to. They're also, it's worth thinking of them as the consequences of impurity. So as long as we have greed and anger and delusion, there's going to be attitudes and behaviors that we're going to be ashamed of, and we're going to give rise to, that lead us to hurt ourselves and hurt others and create tension and conflict and stress and suffering. So valuable to think about, and of course something that it's valuable to be aware of in our practice of mindfulness. Mindfulness is about unearthing these sorts of things, understanding them, appreciating them, and freeing ourselves from their power. So it's a valuable part of the practice. So nine, the first is kodha. Kodha is simple, means anger. So anger is a stain, and this one is easy to see. The teaching on anger is that it's the most obvious of the defilements. It's the most glaring and the most heavily censured. Of all the evils that exist in the mind, anger is something that is most commonly criticized and condemned. So someone who is angry is censured gets a bad reputation quite quickly. It's not that anger is worse than some of the others, it's just more glaring and more obvious. It's hard to deny that anger is something that is a stain. Just as a stain on a nice white shirt, a person who is kind and pleasant and friendly, even a person who is beautiful or handsome, immediately becomes ugly and unattractive and repulsive as soon as they become angry. Anger is not something that anyone really is pleased by, unless you're an enemy. We're pleased when our enemies become angry because it hurts them. So you often see people laughing or smiling or happy when their enemies become enraged or upset. That's the only time that anyone really looks up and appreciates anger, when it hurts someone, because anger is painful. It's harmful to the person who gets angry, and of course it leads us to lash out and cause pain and suffering in others. The second is makkha. Makkha means depreciation of others. So it's not angry at someone else, but it can be caused by anger. It can also be caused by greed or delusion. But makkha means when you don't appreciate the good in others. It could be the good that they've done for you, not being grateful or appreciative of the help that people have given to you. It can also be not appreciative of the good qualities of others. Sometimes trying to maybe behind their back speak bad about other people when you're afraid that they might be preferred. You know, if you want to make friends, sometimes it's tempting to boast about yourself and put other people down. Putting other people down is a stain. It's a sign of goodness, a sign of maturity, a sign of enlightenment when someone is appreciative of the good in others, even if it's someone who is hostile or someone who is critical or unfriendly, to see the good in them and to look at the good side and be able to see their good qualities and help to foster and encourage those good qualities is a sign of greatness. Not to mention, of course, the good that they have done for us. If anyone has ever helped us or supported us or done good things, been kind or generous to us, appreciation of that is an essential part of what it means to be a good person, obviously. Those who are ungrateful are the basest and the most impure. But in general, to not appreciate the good in others and to depreciate it, to speak badly or to belittle others or belittle the accomplishments of others, to always find the flaw in other people's goodness is a taint and a stain that we have to guard against. We have to be careful about, work towards improving in ourselves. You can work towards it by expressly approving and trying to find the good in others. This is an active practice, but ultimately it just comes down to being mindful, whether it's anger or this deprecation of others. It's just a product of a warped mind, a product of a mind that has greed and anger and delusion. And through the practice of mindfulness, of course, this improves. You're able to straighten out your mind and see things more clearly and not have a biased view of others. The third is issa. Issa means jealousy. Jealousy, obviously, is a stain. It's something that is most ugly. Greed is one thing, but to be jealous of others when they have good is, of course, worse. And people who go through their lives being jealous of others or comparing themselves to others or wishing other people didn't have the good things, it's just the worst thing to think about. When you define it so clearly, jealousy is one of the worst. Of course, it makes someone ugly. In English, they use the word green to describe someone who is envious and jealous of others. Green because it makes them sick. It makes them unpleasant to be around. It makes them suffer themselves. We should never be jealous, and this is another very similar to not depreciating the value of others. We should rejoice that others have good. Lack of jealousy is a sign of understanding non-self. When you're able to appreciate goodness wherever it comes, appreciate happiness wherever it comes. If someone else is happy, to think of that as a good thing, even though you yourself might be unhappy or in suffering or pain. A person who can put aside the identification that this is mine or this is theirs or this is mine or not mine, and see the good in goodness and see the good in happiness as someone who is mature, and it's a sign of purity, it's a sign of enlightenment. So jealousy is obviously something we have to guard against, and none of these things are things we can control. As I said, they're often going to be inevitable. Jealousy is something no one wants to be accused of or be guilty of, and so sometimes we want to hide it. We'll talk about hiding things, this is another one of them, but talking about jealousy, sometimes you do feel jealous. You wish that you were in someone else's position. Maybe you see someone who is happy, who is free from the suffering that you're facing, and you wish that you were them. Someone in a good position, someone who is free from debt when you have debt, who is free from burdens when you have burdens, and so on. someone who has happiness and peace when you don't have happiness or peace. It's a first step towards finding peace, obviously, if you can appreciate and be happy for others, even when you don't have what they have. The fourth is stinginess. So sort of the flip side of jealousy, when you have something, to not want to share it with others. There's two kinds of stinginess, stinginess of possessions and stinginess of Dhamma. So mostly we're familiar with being stingy with possessions, and this is obviously a great stain on someone's character. A great person, a mature individual, someone who is pure and on the way reach the goal of enlightenment, is always going to be perfectly generous with their possessions and with their knowledge as well. They will never feel like there's a difference between you having something good or me having something good. Wherever it's needed, wherever it's best put to use, they're happy to apply it. So if someone else asks them for a share of something or needs help, asks for assistance, they're willing and ready to give that assistance whenever and wherever they can, wherever appropriate. So not being stingy. Obviously, you can't help everyone in every way, and sometimes people will take advantage if you're too generous. So it doesn't mean being generous without having wisdom. And for the most part, we have to be circumspect with how we go about our goodness, but to be stingy, to not want to share things and to prefer that you yourself have all of a good thing, not willing to give up some of your happiness so that others can as well benefit, is a real stain on one's character. And the same goes with sharing the Dhamma. This is something a little more subtle, but it's a part of the Buddha's teaching that we should share our wisdom, our learning, even the things that we have only heard and maybe not even realized ourselves, but to share it with others. Some people are afraid to share the Buddha's teaching, or hesitant, or even just lazy, stingy, feeling like I'm happier if I just look after my own spiritual well-being and not be concerned with or considerate of the spiritual well-being of others. So sharing the Dhamma is a big part of the Buddha's teaching, and if you aren't accomplished yourself as a practitioner or a teacher, sharing what you have learned and sharing what you've been taught can be or is an important part of how we live our lives. Just being generous doesn't mean you have to take on the role of a teacher or try and guide someone to enlightenment, but sharing what you know and what you've heard and providing direction or at least pointing the way to others, it shows an open mind, an open heart. It shows generosity. And it shows purity. The fifth is something called Maya. Maya is a familiar term for people who know anything about Hinduism. Maya is something that covers. It literally means illusion. So something can be an illusion means it's not real. But in this case, five and six are actually a pair. So five is Maya, six is called Satya. Maya means illusion, Satya means deception. The commentary says that they're a pair, and what Maya actually means, according to the commentary, is when you pretend to be something that you're not. Whereas Satya means pretending that you're Maya means pretending that you're not something that you are, hiding something that you are, right? So illusion, covering up what's actually there, that's Maya. And Satya means pretending to be something that you're not. What this means is, in relation to the Buddha's teaching, means in regards to goodness and evil, wholesomeness and unwholesomeness. So Maya means covering up your bad qualities. This is a stain. Of course, our bad qualities are bad things, and we don't want people to see, just like we want our clothes to be clean, we don't want people to see with a dirty appearance. This is in a worldly sphere, this is something that's important to people, that we should present a clean and attractive appearance. Likewise, we don't want people to see the the evil that is in our hearts, and so it's quite natural to want to hide it from others. But as you know, as you can see clearly from meditation practice, this isn't the way to be free from it. As long as you're hiding it and pretending it isn't there, this kind of attitude will only get in the way and serve to hinder your progress on the path to enlightenment. As long as you're hiding it from yourself and even hiding it from others, this is a stain in and of itself. When you pretend that you aren't angry when you are angry, or you deny when people accuse you or point out your flaws, we should be open to the best of our ability. Obviously, we don't have to share all of our problems with other people, and we don't have to open up to those who might use it against us. Obviously, this sort of thing is something best kept to people who you trust, your teacher, your fellow meditators. During a meditation course, you don't want to be chatting with your fellow meditators, but your fellows in the Dhamma, people who you trust, people who are on the same path, people who you know are not going to condemn you, who are going to support you and appreciate your honesty and your sincerity. We're so afraid of what other people will think of us. What if they knew that I had this flaw or that flaw? Because of ego and because of attachment to self and because of our attachment to praise and censure. We want to be praised as much as possible, and we want to avoid any kind of blame of any sort, because we're addicted to these sorts of things. We will only approve of praise, and we can't stand if people are blame us or criticize us in any way. This isn't the way to enlightenment. These are stains. This is an impurity and something that is beneath us, something that we should do our best to free ourselves from. If you want to be free from suffering, you really have to let go of what other people think of you anyway. You have to be free from the need to please others or to seek out other people's approval. And so we should be open and free and acknowledge when we have greed, when we have anger, when we have delusion, that they are there. When any of these unpleasant qualities of mind exist, to not pretend they don't, to not pretend that we're enlightened or pretend that we're free from any kind of flaw. The Buddha said this is one of the worst. The Buddha pointed this out as one of the greatest evils that someone in the practice can engage in. If you are pretending to be something that you're not, pretending to be free from any kind of defilement that does exist. And so the flip side of the coin, satheya, is when you pretend to be something that you're not. So pretending that you have good qualities that aren't actually there, pretending to be mindful, pretending to be focused, pretending to be wise, claiming to be wise or presenting yourself as someone who is something that you're not. And they're very much a part of the same thought process. You pretend to be free from suffering, free from defilement, means also to be pretending to be enlightened. So what you pretend to be and what you pretend not to be, very much two sides of the same coin. And obviously this is not the way to become free from suffering. We shouldn't be concerned with how people view us. We should be open and honest and really focus on our own state of mind rather than how others view us. This is a real change and something we have to work at. Something obviously that's not going to come immediately. We're always going to be keen on the approval of others, approval of our teachers, approval of our peers, even approval of society as a whole can really get in the way of our practice. It's something that we have to slowly, slowly work towards, something that we have to understand is a stain, something that we do best to be free from eventually. And so it's a big part of our work, and these should all be seen as reasons for why we practice, encouragement as to why we're doing what we're doing, is really to address these and to work on them and free ourselves from them. So that's 6-7 is musawada. Now musawada is a bit out of place here because it's the only one that's not strictly mental. But we can see that musawada means false speech. So it's about speech, it's something that you actually engage in rather than some quality of mind. But really all of these are related to actions as well, but again they're all more subtle. speech is a very difficult aspect of our being to purify. Obviously not as difficult as the mind, and our mind is so quick that it's very hard to control and keep your mind from giving rise to greed or anger, or delusion, or any of these things, jealousy, stinginess, etc. But speech nonetheless is in and of its own right difficult to control, which is why during a meditation course we tell meditators not to talk. Try your best to not speak unless necessary. Don't be chatting or engaging in conversation with others except your teacher. You should be sticking to yourself. And this is for good reason, because our speech is very difficult to control, very difficult to even monitor and keep up with. It's very difficult to be mindful when you're speaking. Very easy to fall into unmindfulness and even false speech. So in a meditation center, it's not likely to be a big problem. But in life as a whole, this is something that is very dangerous and a real danger that we have to be aware of and wary of and concerned about. Easy to arise, easy for us to slip and say something false and distort reality or mislead someone away from the truth. This is a stain. Lying is a stain, and it's always a stain. The Buddha said lying is the worst. A person who lies, it's a sign that they have no qualms towards any evil deed. He said, a person who lies, there's no evil that they wouldn't perform, because they're willing to distort reality. They're willing to not only hurt someone else, but give them the tools to hurt themselves. When you take someone away from reality, you take away from them their agency, their ability to choose, make informed decisions, and to act in a way that is in line with reality. Now, if someone understands and has all the facts in front of them and still chooses wrongly, that's on them. But if you take away that informed decision-making ability by lying to them, you know, anytime we lie to someone and they believe us, we've taken away their agency. We've done something that is deeply immoral and unethical, something that from a Buddhist perspective is one of the worst things. So lying is something we have to be careful about, and yet it's very difficult for someone who has never practiced mindfulness, who doesn't have the clarity of the practice of mindfulness to be dedicated to. So again, something that we have to be aware of and wary of and understand is certainly a potential, for as long as we aren't free from greed, anger, and delusion, as long as we haven't let go of our attachment to the defilements and to ourselves. Number 8 is papicca. Papicca, papa means evil, icca means greed or desire. So it's interesting, the Buddha here uses the word papicca, and this is actually, it's not surprising, but it's interesting and it's important, because he's not saying icca in terms of desire. He says papicca, evil desire. And so at first glance this seems unwarranted. I mean, according to the Buddha's teaching, all desire, all icca, all greed is wrong, is evil. You know, evil in the sense that it definitely contributes to suffering, that there's nothing worth being greedy about, nothing worth desiring. When we're free from desire, it means we've reached the goal, we have nowhere else to go. Only when you are free from desire can you say you have nothing left to do, nothing left to want, nothing left to achieve, nothing left to prove. Until that time, you're always seeking, you're always wanting, you're always lacking. And so it's interesting that the Buddha should not just outright say icca, say greed or wanting or desire. And again, but it's consistent with the Buddha's teaching, and it's consistent in the sense that the Buddha taught greed is the root of all of our problems. It's the root of all of our suffering, is our attachment to anything, that things should be this way or should not be that way. But that makes it the ultimate goal, and that makes it something that we're working towards. So whereas the Buddha said about being vigilant, he said, don't get angry. And he put his foot down, I mean, he made it very clear, a person who is being vigilant should not be angry, period. But about greed, which is sort of the opposite of anger, he said, not don't be greedy, he said work towards. He used different wording. He said work towards being free from greed. So papiccha really means the worst of our greeds. Iccha, a greed that makes you want to steal, that makes you want to manipulate or hurt other people. Greed that makes you want to take anything that is not given, or force others into giving you, or doing things for you that they don't want to do, this sort of thing. Papiccha relates to really the greed that leads to breaking precepts and that will really lead us to hell. This is a real stain. Of course, any kind of strong greed is problematic and is going to lead to suffering and could rightly be called a stain, but it's not mentioned here because papiccha is something that's really terrible. It's a part of who we are, who we can be, that we really don't want to grow, we don't want to foster, we don't want to approve of. So anytime your greed, which will be there, even as meditators, we don't expect you to not like the food or dislike the food or like your room or dislike your room. We don't expect you to be free from these things. Of course, you're working towards that, and more importantly, you're working towards recognizing it and seeing how it affects you, how our greed and anger and delusion affects us. But you can't do that if you're consumed by evil wishes. You know, if you're consumed by a desire to steal or manipulate others, or if your greed is so strong that you won't even dedicate yourself towards the practice of mindfulness whatsoever. So papiccha, this is it's a good teaching because it reminds us that greed is our ultimate goal to be free from, but most important as meditation practitioners is to be free from the evils of greed, the greed that is going to lead us to harm others and to harm ourselves. The ninth and final one is miccha ditti. Miccha, wrong ditti, view, wrong view. Miccha ditti is the worst of all worst things. It's good that it's at the end. It's understandable that it's placed at the end because we talked about samma ditti, right view, in the Eightfold Noble Path as the first one. That's because miccha ditti is really the worst, wrong view. Your perspective is everything. Perspective is how you approach problems, how you approach challenges, how you approach goals and ambitions, how you even formulate goals and ambitions in the first place. Everything we do in life is going to be colored by our perspective. We're not robots, we're not machines that just do things by logic or based on reason. We do things based on our beliefs, based on our views, and based on our perspective. It's like they say, when you look at the world through rose-colored glasses, well, everything looks colored. Everything looks a certain color. That's a saying that we use to describe bias. When you look at things in a certain way and you see everything in a certain way, and so rather than seeing it as it is, you see it the way you want to see it, or you see it based on your perspective. So there's lots of wrong kinds of perspective, wrong kinds of view, but the deepest ones are about things like karma, belief and understanding about the cause and effect. If someone has wrong view and thinks that there's no consequences of my bad deeds, my deeds, stealing is no problem, killing is no problem. If you believe that when you die there's nothing, well then yeah, you can do whatever you want. You can hurt others, you can engage in addiction and debauchery, because none of it matters. In the end we all die. These kinds of views are dangerous and of course illogical, they lead to real and grave consequences for our outlook on life and for the pollution that we allow to come into our minds and the stress and suffering that we are doomed to as a result. Wrong view relates to views of self, so views of possessiveness, this is me, this is mine. This kind of outlook is so deeply embedded in who we are, and it's such a deeply embedded part of why we suffer. We suffer because of identity. We wouldn't suffer for pain if we didn't think, I am in pain. We wouldn't suffer from harsh speech, harsh words towards us if we didn't think, they said something bad about me, they insulted me. Or people who hit us or attack us. We wouldn't be upset if we didn't think, this is me that they hit, this is me that they hurt. I don't deserve that, or I am being attacked, or I suffered from this. No. even the memories of the things that have happened to us, when we hold on to those memories, this is me, this was me that this happened to, or the bad things that we've done, the mistakes that we've made, when we hold on to them as me and mine, this perspective, such a huge part of Buddhism, because it's such a huge part of the problem. So this is again a stain, something that we as Buddhists are working to free ourselves from, something that you can't avoid. Obviously it's a part of our psyche from the very beginning, so it's something that we work towards. We don't work to try to fix or control these things, we work to try to understand them. Mindfulness is the best way to free us from all sorts of stains. It's the best kind of path to purity, because it doesn't work with by forcing, it doesn't try to control or manipulate or contrive some kind of safety from these things. It heads straight to the root of understanding and freeing ourselves from the delusion that hides these things and distorts them and makes us see what is bad as good, or what is good as bad. It allows us to see bad for what it is and good for what it is, happiness for what it is, suffering for what it is, and understand the causes that lead to happiness and the causes that lead to suffering. So these are the nine mala. Again, it's just one of the many lists. There's longer lists, there's shorter lists, but it's a good list. It's a list of some of the things. It's not the comprehensive list, it's not the authoritative list, but something for us to keep in mind. And we can see that the Buddha taught many different lists to different people, and obviously we're not on the level of the Buddha where I can choose which teaching is perfect for you, perfect for the individual. So we end up just teaching lots of different things, and in general, when we teach generally in this way, we can tailor to the audience, but we can also expect that the audience will always get something good from it. The mala are something that are in all of us, and something that, whereas they might not all be a problem that we're facing, some of them certainly will be, and certainly will be a part of why we, as good people, as people who are dedicated and interested in good things, have come here to practice the Buddha's teaching. So that's the Dhamma for today.